All right. I would like to register a protest.
Register them as much as you like. We're still waiting for the designated tenderee.
You can bitch and moan about the fucking music.
So I compose electronic music. It's my hobby, right? And I am composing. I've been contracted to compose a piece of music.
I'm not paying for it.
30 seconds. I can live with that, right? 30 seconds. I have my synthesizer.
When were you contracted to produce this piece of music?
Well, I'm one of the members, and I decided.
Well, no, but when were you?
When? How long have you been working on?
3 weeks, all right? 3 weeks.
This is possibly longer than that, but this
is... So it's not fair.
We're still waiting for our first rendition.
No, he's had the first rendition. So
you
had
our shit.
I had... And that music we just had now wasn't shit.
Oh, no, that was lovely.
That was great.
So I will compose the music.
That music took me about 5 minutes.
Fucking AI.
Yeah, good.
All right, yeah, so
we're back
after we just had a weekend's break, haven't we?
It was a long weekend, it was good fun. Did
when
some stuff around the garden.
When
and,
was the last one we had? Was Starwood?
Two weeks ago.
It was in December. November. It was in November.
November. 21st of November.
Yeah.
2024. What are you now?
2026.
What the fuck?
Who didn't set the alarm?
How much did we drink?
You didn't set the alarm.
I don't remember any of that.
Well, you should know. You're the glue. You hold this fucking thing together.
I have no idea what's going on.
Anyway,
after that long weekend break,
we're back with attitude.
Refreshed. Yeah.
And rebranded.
We're no longer shooting the shit. We're warts and all. Aussiecraft Distillers, warts and all. And why are we doing that?
All right. So, true story. We were approached a little while ago.
As opposed to the untrue ones you tell.
Dr. Chopper, I'm not a Trumpy.
Oh, all right.
We were going to talk about envelope. No conversation about envelope.
Don't talk about the war.
Anyway. So, I was approached. Hang on. Let's clarify. None of us have consumed major alcohol tonight. We are actually very sober.
Minor alcohol, yes.
I said major. We're just warning you, right? This may push out beyond the hour because it's been a while since we've had a conversation, all right?
It's been a little while.
So pull up a chair. Let's talk. So anyway, I was approached and they said, we would like to give you an opportunity.
How much do they offer?
Nothing.
Oh, well,
no, hang on. No, they offered me an opportunity to commission a piece of music.
Well, I reckon you should have taken it.
Shut up. Anyway, they said, Crafty, no shit. I go, what do you mean? They said, Aussiecraft Distillers shooting the shit. Can you park the shit? And they go, park the shit. All right. So I thought
about poop? No, we went through all that.
We went through poop. We went through bleep. We went through lines. We went through everything, right? So you have that. That's part of the equation of the change, right? And we talked about it. We can do that. We can park it for a night. But then I had a conversation with Bill Owens, who was the president of the American Distillers Institute.
Name drop.
He's now retired. Anyway, but his son is now the president of the American Distillers Institute.
Name drop twice.
And we're going to shoot the ship. No, we're going to warts and all with them. Slow down. Anyway, so that's all going on. And Bill said to me, Crafty, 4 years ago, he said, Crafty, I love what you guys are doing. It is so fucking awesome. But you can't have shit in America. If you get rid of the shit, then I can help you promote it in America. Now, I haven't had a recent conversation with him about Oompa Loompa, and I'm not allowed to say shit. What? I think I'd get away with the shit. But anyway, so we decided complete rebrand, and we spent a lot of time and energy and arguing and having different positions.
They were constructive.
Constructive criticism, and...
democracy ran out?
Or won out. And robust discussion.
Robust, very robust discussion. So we came up with warts and all. Now,
we needed the Ministry of Peace to come in and help us out. But But they were fucked, so we gave it a try ourselves.
We did actually come up with a really good name, which none of us can remember, but it had already been taken. So it was like, fuck. So anyway, we came up with warts and all. And warts as in W-O-R-T, as in unfermented wash beer. Not the fucking ugly thing that grows there, like Trump. Oh, that's the fucking... Anyway, let's not go down that line. So, that is it. We are Aussie Craft Distillers.
Fifth one, you're out.
Warts and all. And you'd like to elaborate further on that?
Do I need to?
Well, you create the imagery and...
Well, I just changed shooting the shit to warts and all.
Well, it took fucking weeks. What happened?
Well, I was doing it.
Is he fucking IT? He's...
Yeah, I actually did. And I came up with that new intro video.
Don't get me started on the music. Don't get me started.
Wasn't it good?
Don't get me started.
It gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, goosebumps. Anyway.
And I rebranded the website.
And in the meantime, I've turned 62 and I am now the Aussie Angry Distiller. Right? And I'm retiring in 5 years, so I get to do stuff I couldn't do. And
one year closer to talking to clouds.
Barking at the moon right now. I'm barking at the moon. Anyway, guys,
take a step back for effect.
And make sure you hold on to something tight.
Anyway, guys, it is so good to be back, right? Last year, we burnt out. We burnt out. We tried to do too much in a short period of time, and it was just so hard. And this particular man here was caught up in a ball going, fuck, I'm trying to organize these and people aren't turning up and we're trying to fucking, oh, fuck. So this year we're taking a calmer approach.
And you were under a table.
I was under a table, yeah. And you were.
And then I think I was under my desk, so.
So that's it. That's the truth. And we did an episode on mental health. So we can honestly say, hand on heart, we're part of that club.
When we say we did a mental
what did you do?
Poor old Leaky did. You and I were having fun somewhere.
Where?
I don't know. We had another engagement. I remember.
When? What?
When the mental health thing was on. Poor
Leaky. Oh, yeah. I carried that episode.
Yeah.
You weren't mentally strong at that point.
I
never
carried that episode.
That's like giving a... That's like giving a plane, flying the plane to a passenger who goes, I play PlayStation.
I don't know what I'm doing.
It's something similar, just press the buttons.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's the honesty. You know we're honest. We don't fuck around, right? We are the unofficial voice of the Australian Craft Spirits Movement.
I thought we were officially the unofficial.
No one said we're official. I don't think anyone will.
Officially the unofficial.
We're officially the unofficial.
Yeah.
And we're probably going to get banned, and that's okay.
Banned
from? From what?
Like the universe and everything.
Yeah, okay.
I don't care.
So you probably noticed we're rabbiting on, and there's a slight reason why we're rabbiting on, because we have a guest, but...
We don't have a guest.
These things work a lot better when we have a guest. I'm just from past experience.
It's kind of the format that we've built.
I know.
We do have a guest, but he's stuck in traffic. He will be with us shortly. And the trouble is, he's going to be cold stone sober.
Hey, did you hear this good joke?
What?
You know, Voyager 1 is the furthest man-made object from the planet.
You sure it's not Trump? He hasn't claimed that one?
No, but the lucky bloody thing is as far away from Trump as you can get.
I've got one, the best Trump joke. Trump and the president of Denmark. And the president of Denmark goes, hey, I've got a joke. And Trump goes, ooh. And the president goes, the prime minister of Denmark goes, knock, knock. And Trump goes, who's there? And then she goes, Greenland. And he goes, I don't get it. And she goes, and you never will.
Needless to say, our US expansion is on the and our proposed roadshow around every US state and visiting every US distillery, there's a slight complication with that.
I can't get into American Samoa. I was rejected to get into American Samoa. Where were you rejected?
I wasn't rejected.
Well, you tried to get in somewhere. Where was it?
Well, I got my hamburger. Why didn't you get yours?
McDonald's. Apparently, Computer says no.
So aside from rebranding and talking shit and whatnot, we also have some other things going on. We're going to be focusing a bit more on events this year. Episodes will be a little bit more sporadic. We're hoping maybe once a month.
And that's the max.
Yeah, we probably won't be able to handle fortnightly or weekly as we did at one point.
Yeah, no.
But the event side of things, we're hoping to ramp those up and do a few more events. So we did one just recently as a tribute night to the Oak Barrel in Sydney, which is closed. And that was a great night. We didn't film it. It was just about getting some stories. Can we send out notifications in advance? Yes. Of course we will.
Yes.
For ones aware that you're allowed to come to. So, yes, we'll be having a few events. We do already have a few episodes lined up and ready to go.
We might have a phone out list.
We may even have a mail list.
That's
a mail, a mailing list.
That's why I'm not in charge of IT.
That's why you're not drinking.
We will email, we'll put it on the socials and email it out. Then I'm going to build up the email list a little bit more as well. So stay tuned, there will be some events. Most of the events will be around the inner west of Sydney. So we've got a bar in Helston Park.
A lazy bar.
That is, that'll be our home, really, won't it?
So Lazy Bar is a good friend of myself, Luke and Todd. It's walking distance from where I live. And Lazy Bar...
Not so much for me, but...
Yeah, it's a bit of a hike for you. It's a bit of a hike.
So, right, it's still in the same...
same LGA.
Yeah, it is, which is the largest LGA in Sydney.
Yep.
It's huge. Anyway, so Lazy Bar... So Gary, who owns Lazy Bar, is a good friend of mine. And he made an offer to me a while back and said, Crafty, I only want to run my bar. And he's retired. He goes, on a Saturday and a Sunday. So he said, it's yours. From Monday to Thursday, you do whatever you want. And I went, mate, that's just incredibly generous. So I did a whiskey tasting with Mick from Imbue about 2 years ago. And we just did a whiskey tasting and then we did bottle sales on the road. And that was all good. And I said to Gary, I said, so if I can do anything? He goes, yep. And I said, so we could do whiskey cocktails? And he goes, yep. So we could do Aussie Craft Distiller shooting the shit back then, live? He goes, yep. Ah, I got everything, right? I got a platform. So my distillery is my creative platform, as I say, right? This is giving me a fucking theatre.
Yeah, well, those that are out in the, what do you call that, the nether regions.
Well, they're fucked. Nether regions. So anyway, guys.
When we talked to Foursquare.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, we did one. We did one lazy. Exactly. Yes. Foursquare with Richard Seale. It's great. With Ali from Karoo as guest and Brad Wright from Single Malt Whiskey Club.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we got
Rum tribe
as well.
Yep.
So we got lots of different things going on. We did an event last night. So I've created a co-brand of Lazy Bar Craft Works is now called Lazy
Craft Bar.
No, it's not.
It's not called Craft Bar.
No.
What's it called then?
Crafty's Lazy.
No. Anyway,
he was lazy. But
it's called Lazy Works.
Okay.
And I have an eye.
It does
a,
actually work.
Yeah, no, it does. It's the juxtaposition of the words. It's the tension and all that. So, anyway, so Lazy Works. So, Lazy Works
it's surprisingly good.
Will run different events. But it's not just about me. It will showcase other distilleries. So, last night we did the first Lazy Works event, which
it's not just about you. It's all about you.
No, it's not about me. So, last night was the Lazy Daisy Boozy Cocktail Night. Craftworks and Karoo, Nick and Ali. We came down.
Oh boy, Karoo had some really good.
They did.
Cocktails.
That's not really.
Do you know
good
it was the first time I was been behind a bar?
We noticed. Nick
said. Nick said the same thing.
And that's what Gary said as well.
He said, "Yeah." No, Nick said, "You're not match ready, mate." told me that today. I was like, oh. "Keep going."
Yeah.
So anyway, so Lazy Works going to do different things, but it's not just me. Brewers, distillers.
candlestick makers?
Cheese, maybe. Cheese makers, salami makers, producers. We're going to do these events. So two new events coming up planned. And we plan to do two events a month. First one coming up is the Barrel Oak Club, which sounds very much like the Oak Barrel
Club.
And what we're doing is we're giving a home, one home, and there's many homes, to the whiskey community in Sydney, right? We ran the Oak Barrel Tribute Night, and people were so grateful that we had given them an opportunity to get together because they didn't have a final event. And there was a sense of grievement. There was a sense of we didn't get a chance to say goodbye. So we gave them a chance to say goodbye. We had 40-odd people from memory. It was fantastic. And what came out of it was there's a real community. Who's odd?
The 40-odd people,
yeah. They were odd. Yeah, I get what you're putting down there.
No, I don't. Anyway, so the point is, we're now giving them a home, and there's other homes that they're going to have, right? It's such a beautiful thing, right? I'm going to stop now, but the main point I'm trying to make is there is a lot of things happening. I'm going to be more Sydney-centric for sure because fucking Great Western Highway, the throat's been slit, and now you cannot travel the Great Western Highway from Sydney to over into the Central West. You have to go down side roads, and that's a whole different story. It's a horrible thing. Petrol prices. I can't afford to go out to the Central West and do my markets anymore. It's ridiculously expensive. So I still will maintain those, but I'm going to turn
my focus in. As may or may not know.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. That's a really good point.
It's like talking about the blatantly obvious.
A bit like Trump. Look at that fucking piece! Fucking put down your fucking war toys! Anyway, that was the Aussie Angry Distiller. Check it out on TikTok. Different to my Instagram and Facebook. So, yes. Yeah.
It comes with a warning. You will be disturbed.
Yeah, so that's a step back for effect. So that's what's going on in my world with Craftworks. Which is massive, massive change.
For all of humanity and others?
Could be, yep, could be, right. Could be.
And everyone else, yeah.
So I think I've told you enough about Craftworks, right? And I'm part of Aussie Craft Distillers, Warts and All. It's super, super proud we put this together. And the reason we put it together, and just so you guys understand, because some of you may not, we got together during COVID and talked about it. So during COVID, the large spirits companies, the internationals, were starting to find content and they were going out and talking to distillers. And I remember there was one, it was Diageo, was talking to an Australian distiller and they were saying, oh, and you are, and the person said his name. And he goes, oh, and your distillery is, and the person said what their distillery was. Oh, and you make, and the person said what he make. And we went,
I need your face.
But what on journey? Okay.
Oh, he's coming.
And I said to these guys, I said, what the fuck? There's no real stories, no real heart. So we decided we'd just go and talk to a couple of friends. We started with Ed from OCD.
The only person to walk out, but
he did, didn't he? That's right, he did. Yeah. So we got up to 92 episodes, not just local, but we also did international distillers as well. And we had a
really
wild
good
time.
Back catalogue. It is a really good back catalogue.
It is a back catalogue. And if you're new to the industry and you just want to hear some stories about different Australian distillers and internationals, it's a great catalogue. We did a couple of live ones. We did Waterford Distillery in Ireland.
Plus also we've spoken to Coopers. So Andrew Young.
Oh, yeah, Coopers.
Good friend of the show.
Yep.
Cooperers. We've spoken to a yeast expert.
Yep.
We
did Black Dog.
We did Black Dog, we did Zymus, enzymes and shit.
I don't think that's what you call it.
Enzymes and
saber glass. We talked about glassware.
Yeah.
Right? So we've done a lot and we've got a lot of plans for the future. Predominantly Australian distillers. We're going to sort of refocus back on Australian distillers because we're only doing another 9 episodes this year, right? But we're going to do some live sessions at Lazy Bar. So when we get those, we want a packed house. We want 40 people, bums on seats, right? And I'll open my bar. Well, you have to pay for it.
So Hamo's going to have to come down from the Central Coast for one of those.
Hey, it's worth it, mate. It's worth it.
Absolutely worth it.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't know what Cam's doing. He says he's online and joining, but
what's he doing?
Nothing. He's not there.
He's joined someone else.
So we can just talk amongst ourselves for a little while longer.
So we do have a guest.
Yeah.
Funny, though.
Apparently.
Apparently.
Online joining. Okay. So I'll just go, any issues? This is live.
Any issues?
So there he is. There he is.
Oh, here we go.
There he is.
Gentlemen.
Hello.
Cam, mate, before we do anything.
He's looking very relaxed after.
Before we do anything, you're missing something. You're missing something called alcohol. Have you got something in the glass there?
Oh, actually, I've got two little samples here with me. Yeah, which I'm one of them's a rum cask, our own rum, which we've emptied and then put whiskey into the into that cask to have it afterwards. So, wow. Yes, I've got something here. Cheers, gentlemen.
Nice.
Oh, mate, we need to. I'm going to have a whiskey and coke to start.
A whiskey and coke.
I'm going to have a whiskey and coke, right? So,
what whiskey are you going to have?
Well, I normally have JD, but I'm not a. I'm fucking over it. I'm really over it. I'm after something that's actually got some flavor.
So, what did you find?
So, I found this.
Where'd you find it?
It was on the table just there.
Oh, that was because I put it there.
Oh. Ty, that looks familiar. I recognize that from somewhere.
Yeah. Now,
Tiger Snake, traditional Australian whiskey, traditional bourbon mash bill.
It does look a bit backwards.
It is backwards. So that's backwards.
It's looking to me, as I can see, that's forwards.
We need to. One sec. Yeah, it's all right. We're pouring. We're going to have JD and. So do we call it a TS? A TS and Coke? Do we call it a TS
Tiger Snake. It's a grainy
Cam, what do we call it? Do we call it a TS and Coke?
Yeah, Tiger Snake and Coke. Yeah, Tiger Snake and Coke, 100%.
Tiger Snake and Coke. Right, so crack your can, boys. I'm going to have some of yours. I'm saving that.
Use your own bloody cup.
Don't top it up all the way. Just give me a Harvey.
I'll give you something, all right?
Well, that's done.
There you go.
Right. So for those that don't know, we're drinking Cam's whiskey. And this is a specific whiskey called Tiger Snake. And this is a very, very interesting product. Very interesting approach. So let's start with that, Cam, and then we'll go back to the bigger story. Why the fuck did you make this?
Because I wanted to see what it would be like to follow the American process more closely. So I still have the Tiger Snake OG. That expression of Tiger Snake you've got there is a grain-in whiskey.
Right.
Like most Australians, I think, most of... Australian brewers and whiskey makers, we do the mash tun and separate the grain out from the wash to make the wort. Whereas the Americans do a grain in process where they you know mash, brew, ferment and distill with the grain in the liquid all the way through. Obviously it's a bit easier and more economic. You know, you've got less processing steps, so you save a fair bit of time and all that sort of thing. But at the same time, when you're making that, you know, the big porridge type of your grain mash bill, when you're actually cooking it and distilling it in the pot, you've got the husks and the grain and everything else that's in there adding to those flavours. So I think you get a different mouthfeel with this grain in. And look, it is a cheaper whiskey for sure. We use different grains in terms of, you know, wheat direct from local farmers that we could put into it. Corn locally, so yeah, it's been a long time making, but a much different style of whiskey.
What about the actual still itself? So that immersion elements would be problematic in that sort of format. So are your elements external?
Oh no! So in this distillery, where it's a steam-fired boiler, so it's all steam for the stills.
Right.
So first of all, we put it through a jacketed 800-liter. Frilly, an Italian still, 800-litre pot with an onion head, and then it goes down to a doubler, I guess you would sort of call it a boiling rechamber at the bottom of a column. So it goes from a pot to the onion to a column that's got sort of four or five plates in it and a deflammator at the top. and then over to the condenser from there. So it is sort of more that column still beer stripping run like the Americans do. We don't use a column for our spirit run, which the Americans do. We still use a big pot still. So we do, you know, 750, 800 litres at a time in the Italian still, and we've actually got an American ADE, American still as well, same sort of size with columns, a 16 plate, four above and 16 plates in the column. So all stripping stills are done through, or stripping runs done through them, which is, of course, a fair bit harder because you've got grain in the still. So as you were saying, Craft, if you had elements directly in there, then you'd get a lot more burnt. You know, I couldn't do it in Albany. You know, this can only be done in my Porongrap distillery, 60 k's north, where everything, by steam. So they're like Bain Marie's, if you like, steam jackets, copper stills. Yeah, go, James.
But and maybe this is a stupid question, but that's why I'm here as the non-distiller.
Well, you are a distiller, but carry on.
So when you're distilling a massive pot of wash without the grain in there, obviously your level's going to be dropping as distillates coming out and condensing out over there. When you've got the grain and the husks and all that other bulk stuff in there, and as you're distilling it down and your levels are dropping, does that become a burn risk or do you run the risk of it drying out or like?
100%.
That's not a dumb question.
Indeed. You get certainly more risk, Luke, as you boil down through the still. Of course, you've got less liquid left in the pot because a lot of it's come over. So the benefits of using steam, which is relatively gentle in the jacket, is that you really avoid a lot of that sort of harsh burn element. So we don't find that we get caked on, you know, black bits. Even in Albany, where we do have elements in stainless tubes, I see Crafty's going on that toaster, right?
Seriously yum, mate. Seriously,
it was really good. It was great straight, but
I fucking hate a JD and Coke, but I'd quite happily drink that.
It takes it to another level with Coke in it.
Sorry, carry on.
Even in Albany, where we use a mash tun and we make the single malt lime burners. You know, we have a wash there that is, you know, got no grain in it, or essentially, you know, very little. But you still, every year, I'll get in there and have to use like a paint scraper to scrape the burnt bits off the outside of the element sheath. So my elements aren't direct; they're in stainless tubes. Still have to do that, even though there's small bits. But with the steam, don't seem to have the same issue at all.
And how does having all the grain in there impact yield?
In fact, you get a better yield, far better yield. So this is why I can do this. So maybe the other point of saying this, you know, all of my other whiskies, if I divide them, I'd say my other ones clearly sipping whiskies. They're made, you know, I think to be you know, consumed that way. But that said, drink it, you know, however you like it. This one here is made more with an eye on the economics of it, because if you're separating the grain out, you don't actually separate all the liquid. The grain comes out of your mash tun still with quite a volume in it. And in fact, I'm just looking at getting a screen separator just for that purpose to recapture. So probably another 10-15% of liquid that's really sitting in.
At the bottom. A lot of liquid.
It is a lot of liquid. You can weigh that, do by weight of your grain. You know, it holds a lot. So if that's all going into your still, I mean, obviously not all of those solids ferment, but it means you've got a lot more of that sort of material to hang around to get broken down into fermentable sugars and fermentable fibers. So you get a higher yield of litres per alcohol per tonne of grain by doing a graining process. Ultimately, I think you get it does give you a more of a waxy mouthfeel because of the grain that's been in it. That's a personal view, you know, drinking it neat. Lots of people have said, Cameron, you don't need to mix them out. It's beautiful. I'm like, yeah, it is, but have it mixed. Beautiful. And then I thought, beautiful as well. So
as a non-bourbon drinker, I just fundamentally dislike bourbon. For me, it is too sweet. I don't like the vanilla and banana that I get from it.
Yep.
So So having a cheeky taster of this before we went on air, like, okay.
We can drink this straight.
I can have my mind changed.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to inquire too, Cam, just jump in. So the tannins in the grain, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you, from your perspective, how are you perceiving that in what's coming out in the end?
Well, let me put it this way. All of the spirit that we make is palatable for me straight out of the still. This one, when it came out of the still, and even after a year or 2 years in wood, it was still too forward and oily and heavy in that agricultural note. So what you're having here is 5 to 8 year old whiskey. So I've got, we can see behind me, I've got a few barrels sitting here. If you 2,600 barrels of finished product out in Prongerups, and a couple of hundred barrels of finishing casks, so Tawny, Ruby, Apera, Musket, that sort of thing, which we've got our own in-house program, plus rums and, you know, a few other sort of specialties around. So we did this we ran it for a while, you know, to give it a good batch size, but we're now running, we've created a 10,000 litre vat. You know, we had some stainless steel fermenters from the winery that I've purchased as part of the Prongerup distillery conversion. We're now sort of taken out of wood at about 5 years and then putting it into this tank, a big vat Solera system, where some of the whiskies have been older aged up to 8 years or so, but of course we're caught by having to use the youngest.
Yeah, right.
Now I'm gonna pipe in here. So
a few notes about young whiskey to old whiskey, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm now 62, so technically I'm allowed to be angry, right? I'm an angry old man, right?
It's never stopped them before.
So, I was gonna say, never stop you. I agree, Todd.
So the comment I'd like to make as the Aussie Angry Distiller, which is my TikTok thing, is people get
Go to that channel, guys.
People get caught up with what is craft, right? And some people would say, Cam, you're so big, you know, you can't be craft, right? Angry Distiller says craft is a mindset, right, and an application. It's the way you approach to make your product, and it's the way you mentally attack your business. What's your thoughts on that, Cam?
Look, it's interesting, Crafty. The US American Distilling Institute, of course, has a definition of craft, which is on the numbers of, what is it, proof gallons that you produce per year, and I think it's something like you've got to be under 400,000 litres a year or something. Like, it's a reasonable volume. It is a big number, but it's not that big, really. We're a small company, mate. By anybody's standards, we're a small company. We're not large. Certainly when I started, and I guess, you know, I was in a business incubator in 150 square meters, and, you know, really part timing it to where it is now. It's a totally different world. You know, I was whiskey distillery number 5 in the country, and now there's 1,600 odd distilleries around the country in total. A lot. And it's you know, the landscape's changed. People about craft, am I still craft? Well, you know, you've got to look at the team who worked for me, and this is interesting. I would remember 15 years ago going to a spirits conference in London, and this whole craft thing was being debated then, and one of the guys got up saying he spoke to the head distiller at a Scottish distillery. He goes, talk craft, I'd have more craft in my little finger than most of these craft distillers would have. Touché to him, you know, he would. So I think you're right, Crafty. It's the attitude of the people and the approach to the business and, you know, what you're doing. Look, I've got two guys in distilling in Albany who do all the brewing and all the distilling and all the barrel work. I'm hands-on, full-on hands-on on the gin still in Margaret River. I put a new 200-litre still in there, and we've got a, you know, 20-litre vacuum still, which does amazing things. It's a challenging time for anybody, but look, we would still fall within that craft. When I go to these international trade shows and people are going, I didn't know Australia made spirits, I'm like, we're all craft. So, yeah, look, I mean, at the same time, I would also go, you know, there's this interesting position now, and I think, you know, particularly we've got a lot of smaller distillers, what I would actually call a micro distiller. I would still think I'm a small, you know, and look at this, well, I'm still think I'm a small, possibly medium, you know, distiller, but small, really. Meet the small business guidelines these days as the business has come back a bit. So there are some challenges within the Australian legal system and how our excise rebates set up that I think means we don't have a level playing field amongst everybody. And that's, you know, that's a very challenging time, I think, for, you know, sort of particularly for people who are at that small to medium size and looking to try and grow from there. It is a capital intense business, right? It's one of the hardest economic models that you can actually, if you're particularly talking brown spirits, of any business you can do. But hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of mums and dads, you know, probably without the financial acumen to be able to do it or understand it, are jumping on going, hey, I love this product that much, I want to give it a crack. And I think that's great. But I do think there will be, you know, there'll be challenges. I went and visited a distillery early this week, 2,000 litre mash tun, well, 2,000 litre tun, 2,000 litre louter tun. Everything was perfectly balanced, like they'd spent millions on it. And it was for sale for probably 10% of what it had cost them.
Fuck. I was talking to a Victorian distiller today, right? Very established, highly recognised, highly awarded. I won't name the name, right? And he's just smashed through the 350, right? At the same time, he's trying to expand his infrastructure in his distillery. And he's going, it's fucked. It's fucked, right?
When you're growing pains from...
It's hitting that 350. So the 350 has put an artificial cap on business growth, but at the other end of the spectrum, it's let people come into the industry, it's removed a barrier to entry, and you got people coming in and go, hey, I just get a beer keg and a column still, put it in the corner, buy my neutral spirit, say it went through my still and claim my 350, which is just wrong for the industry. That's not why the whole thing is together.
Yeah, I don't think everybody is doing that. I'm sure that some people are doing it, and I've just heard some products. Yesterday I was on a national call where one state were reporting that people are selling spirits for $18 a bottle, retail, 700ml bottle, 750ml bottle. So, yeah, I was in a bottle shop today where there was a litre of vodka supposedly locally distilled and never heard of the people for $54 for a litre. So
you see, it's popping up on legitimate bottle shop shelves now.
You can't blame people from doing that. Look, it's interesting for me. I pay enough excise that even with the excise rebate, I'm still paying an average of about $92 a litre. Right. So even if you take my excise bill and still divide it, so it's ridiculous. So I think that that's fair. I employ a lot of people. You know, we've had a lot of people work with us for a long time. I think that, you know, as I say, I think there's just things that need to be tweaked and done about it. I was actually toying around. I like to be a bit of a contrarian, maybe. Going overseas, well, there's some countries where you actually have to have an excise sticker on the bottle, you know, to prove that there's had booze paid, a tax paid on it. I'm sort of going, well, maybe people like who are in my situation are going, I'm paying tax. So I want to let my consumer know that I am, and I should be putting an excise paid sticker on my bottles. You know, just to go. Now, it was raised. That's not fair for the people who are under the 350. And I'm like, well, if they want to show their legitimacy, you can become a member of the Australian Distillers Association. We've got a code of conduct to follow and so on. You use that sticker.
You play by the rules.
Would your sticker include how much excise do you pay? Currently at $108 a litre or...?
No, I think because I think it's got to be something that's just simple that people can see. So I think you just say, look, if you're an excise paying distillery, you can just say, you know, legally tax has been paid on this product, excise paying distillery. Just so that, you know, we're
something visual.
You see the difference. If you go in and you find a product that, you know, is at $18 or $20 or $25 a bottle, Well, that's clearly somebody who's got no excise rebate, well under it, and, you know, good luck to them. But I want a consumer to be able to go, well, oh, hold on, okay, actually, this distillery and that distillery and that distillery, they're paying tax, and I can see that their product is that bit more. But again, do I think that's, I don't know, I'll throw it out there.
So I did something very interesting. I was talking to a distiller in Queensland. I won't say who, but we were talking about things, and I do a lot of things on AI, a lot of projections, and I use talking AI, and I debate with it, argue with it. It's all good, right? So anyway, he was saying there must be...
AI wins often.
He said there must be a doomsday scenario on excise where, because excise has no end point. And he said there must be a point in time where there is so much tax that it's unsustainable and people won't buy. And I went, leave it with me, mate. Leave it with me, right? So I played around. I'm still playing around with it. And I said, okay, when I started, what was the excise? Okay, what's the excise I pay now? And it was something like a 30% increase in excise, right? And so, okay, so project it out 10 years from now. Okay, done. Right, now take a price of a bottle of vodka back when I first started, and now how much is the price of vodka today? And how much will the price of vodka be in 10 years, right? And it was something like $200. And then you factor in people's spending power, the economic situation. You go, you're going to produce something which won't sell. That's your doomsday scenario.
100%.
So excise has no limit. There's no end point. We could be paying $400 a litre in the future. And you can't say, well, no, that'll never happen. But it will, because there's no cap on excise.
Well, it compounds twice a year. So anybody who's ever done a finance course or had a mortgage understands the beauty of compounding. But this one compounds twice a year for us. So, and at far higher rate than what it does for spirits, because that compounding effect with the graph over time actually means that the difference between us and beer gets bigger and bigger and bigger, right, in terms of the tax paid. So it becomes totally disproportionate on a tax excise molecule by molecule sort of basis.
And we won't talk about gas.
Oh, the PRRT, I think that's a beautiful thing that we will continue to. I think it changes Australia's perception that we're paying billions and billions of dollars in spirits excise, and these global nationals are paying very little in PRRT, petroleum rent resources tax. You know, we are capital intense. It takes years. So similar arguments in terms of, you know, us being allowed to then offset your capital and do all the other things that they can do. Let's see. Do I think that'll change? Look, I wrote a paper going, just tax us. You know, we're the third highest rate in the OECD. Just tax us at the average rate internationally. Because where this really hurts us is in the the international market. You know, because we go to the international market, we don't have the available war chest that our overseas competitors have in their home markets, because we're paying so much more in tax to our government. So hopefully the government will wake up to that. Having just looked at the free trade agreement, and it's only a preliminary view yet, the one with Europe, I think we've just been screwed over again. Sorry, I'm sure that it wasn't. The Australian distillers are doing a fair bit of work with government lobbying around that, and I take my hat off to Kylie Lethbridge there. I think she's doing a phenomenal job with engaging with that, and David Ridden as president too. I think they're out there pushing it. It's all going to be a long push on this, right, because we've got the health lobby and a whole lot of others against us. But we need to be internationally competitive. That's, to me, where I think the real future is. Domestic sales are the best, for sure. Sales within Australia, 100% the best. But we're such a small market compared to, you know, to globally.
So talking about international and export, and circling back to the old Tiger Snake, how do you see, or do you have plans to take this to the US and try and capture a little bit of the bourbon market?
That's a really good one, Luke. For me, that'll be an Australian product, and possibly up into Thailand, and some of it into Hong Kong, potentially some of it maybe into Canada.
Okay.
Why not? Why not? Why not? There's a bit of a hole there.
Yeah.
I've been pushing international and export sales for, it would have to be 15 years out of the 22 we've been going, and have done a lot of international shows. Look, it's the US is the hardest market in the world, if I say that. Just still, baby, it'll burn. He'll say it'll burn. I love the smell of burning ethanol in the morning.
I watched it. It was my birthday last week, right? I went out. I'm sorry, digress. I went out with Luke, right? We had a lunch. I had my steak and Fritz, and I was with another friend, Andy, right? And I said, and Andy and I watch movies occasionally, just fuck whenever, right? Middle of the night, right? And I said, let's go back to your place and watch Apocalypse Now. On my
there
birthday.
Birthday.
So, yeah, it was, mate. It was. Sorry,
I don't know. What were we talking about before that? Yeah, look, I think the Australian scene's changed. It's a really hard time. I mean, look, to be very frank, and without, you know, I guess revealing any confidences, I spoke to a distiller yesterday who's just moved to Victoria, Mornington Peninsula, and said that there were six distilleries getting set up in that region, in the Mornington Peninsula region, that they were aware of. Which I think is, I mean, for me, I don't ever want to talk people out of doing it, but I think you need to be really, really clear on what your story is. I had another distiller ask me this week around, right, I want to export, what can I do? And I was like, whoa, I think that you're so far away from, you know, really looking at that one at the moment. What's the Australian government doing to assist your exports? Look, Austrade are working with us. It's a slow and hard process. There's some fantastic people in government, particularly in each one of the state government departments here in Western Australia. We've got Department of Primary Industry and Regional Development. I'm not plugging them, but these guys are seriously committed with wanting to make West Australian spirits an export. Austrade, you know, I've just had one of my staff come back from Korea and Tokyo, and that's our sort of fourth, fifth trip up there. You know, that the staff who work for the Australian government, you could not find people who are more supportive of Australian spirits trying to be in the export space. So, indeed, look, to give credit where it's due, and this is where, to me, I think we need to have a strategy now to develop Australian export. And in fact, for the musicians, I'm sort of toying around with this idea of ACDC being the Australian Cooperative of Distilling Companies. We would actually...
I like it.
It's unique in Australia.
That's an inside joke. You're going to watch the whole thing tonight,
Gary. Highway to hell, maybe. But so, look, I think we've got to tackle it. I've sort of looked at it and strategised and are sort of pushing through this. Well, I'm not pushing through it. I'm putting onto the table to suggest that we could look at Hong Kong, the Greater Bay Area, Shanghai, as a bit of a beachhead for Australian spirits. Nice. With Austrade, you know, there was some money that the federal government made available for export. We only got a very small amount, and well done to Kylie and Australian Distillers for doing that. They put the grant up, they plugged it, they've done it, well done. It is requiring a very large investment from distillers on a dollar for dollar, you know, how much do we put in. But that's there's a thing called Bee Spirits in Hong Kong in late May, which is sort of like one of the major spirit shows in Southeast Asia. And we're going to have, I think, 30 Australian distillers along at that, which I think will be great. Now, what I want to build for that is to go, well, let's have a broader strategy for how we're going to actually create a beachhead here. We need to have like a rotation where you might only go once a year, but we've got a group of Aussie distillers and products going once every 3 months to Hong Kong. So we do a bit of a takeover, right? Now, we need somebody on the ground there to be doing it. If there's 30 distilleries going, I just spoke to ADA president today and said, look, do you mind if I go, hey, everybody, maybe we pass the hat around. Everybody kicks in $500.
Yeah.
If it's 30 of us, that's 15 grand. We can then pay for somebody on the ground in Hong Kong for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks beforehand, plus whatever else, to be doing activations and engagements and building it. You know, whether it's the Australian spirits ecosystem. So I'm trying to get people to think that when we go on these outbound missions, we are first and foremost an Australian distiller, an Australian spirit maker, and second, we are our own brand.
Well, that's powerful. That is so powerful because you know, some people would go, it sounds like a junket, but it's not a junket. You're there to represent Australia, and then secondary to that, you're there to represent who you are, your distillery. That's such a powerful. You got an army coming forward in as a beachhead, taking a beachhead.
Yeah, look, absolutely, and we should all celebrate. If anybody gets export success there, we should celebrate that.
Will there be a lycra uniform?
Like at the Olympics. Hey, Luke, I don't want to turn them off.
Tight around the crotch. It's going to be really tight around the crotch, okay?
Yeah.
Trumpy won't be there.
Was that 28 years later show? Wasn't there some prophylactic addition in that? I might have to. Yeah. Anyway, moving right along. You will note I'm not swearing and doing the drunken histories. Oh,
do you know how that was long? 4 years ago? We're going to talk about it now. You were on the last time was 4 years ago, right?
4 years ago.
Four years ago.
The exact. Hold on, I need to see the exact.
So hang on, he's giving you the date.
January 15, I think it was.
January 15.
I can't read that. 2022.
So what?
It was basically the first person we had in 2022.
Well, episode 20.
Yeah, we go.
So what has changed in your world in 4 years?
2022, the market was very buoyant. Consumers were holidaying in Australia and not going overseas.
Yeah.
There was a lot of pandemic money that was around, and I think distilling was going 110 miles an hour. 2022, okay, what's happened since then? Well, I had three distilleries operating and 55 staff. Since then, I've Porongara Ups, where we made this whiskey, the Tiger Snake that you're having, that's been on care and maintenance for 3 years. Now, we still do all our barrel program and barrel aging, so it's not like we don't do anything there, but that distillery itself hasn't made spirit for 3 years because I was sort of thinking, right, where things are going and how it's heading and, you know, I think we can afford to ease off a bit. Where we are now, look, it's been interesting for me. It's really got us to focus on, I guess, our knitting and our core value or what we do. You know, look, we have won a couple of significant trophies on a global stage and I've managed to leverage those, I guess, or utilise those to go, you know, if I was a filmmaker, it'd be a Palme d'Or that I would have won. If I was a caged fighter, you know, if I was into MMA, you know, then it'd be a big belt that I would have had. I was like, well, I've got this little bit of crystal, but, you know, that whiskey was judged to be bloody some of the best in the world twice.
Hang on. So reverse it. If you were going to the White House and you had to give a little man an award, what would it be? That is so comparable to what you're talking about.
A little penis.
Look,
best distiller
in the world. Can I take that one on, think it over? Well, I've got to think about something
there.
Ken's more likely to go to America.
I can't get to American Samoa, let alone McDonald's right now. So just pause, guys.
What are we having?
We're drinking Cape Byron. And this is the Mac Liqueur cask.
Oh, that's nice.
That they put single malt in.
So they've made a liqueur in a barrel and then emptied it out and used that barrel for single malt.
Correcto.
Great idea.
Yeah, and I bought that for it's one of my many birthday presents.
Have a little pinky on there.
Mate, this is serious.
Birthday, all that means is that you're old.
I know that. I'm one closer to death.
Talking to clouds.
So 1 year closer to the sweet.
This is Australian innovation. Fucking, mate, this is.
Yeah, you know, what is the ABV? 50.
I can't read. 45.
Yeah, okay.
You know, what's really interesting is you would think that the liqueur cask would absolutely monster, but it doesn't. I don't know how long he finished it in the cask. I need to talk to Eddie about it, but it's really, really balanced, really interesting. Guys, an Australian whiskey, rate it highly, rate it.
Contains
I still think, you know,
contains Dania nuts. So.
Look, I think when we look at it, the quality of Australian whiskey across the board is very high. I think there's a couple of outliers, but you know, generally we're all actually living in this golden age of some incredible whiskey. So here's to that. Here's to more of that continuing. I like the idea of utilising that. This whiskey I'm actually having has been aged in a gin cask. So I do some barrel-aged gins in Margaret River.
That's really challenging.
Yes. Chartreuse cask.
Rue de liqueur.
That's really, really cool.
That would be good.
Let's go back to the gin cask, though, because I remember having conversations with it was a distiller about 7 years ago and it was like, God forbid, a barrel-aged gin and then putting a whiskey in after that and then finishing off in a gin barrel cask. So tell me about your experience with it.
Look, my guys have just put it up to me. It's really interesting. I've got Long John who works has worked for me for 10-odd years in Albany, lovely guy. He gave me these two, and I said, "Oh, what are they? There's no labels or anything on them, right?" I'm like, well, "What's going on?" one of them, he was just going, "Look, it's gin cask. Look, I think it's very interesting. It's tasting a bit too tannic for me at the moment. No, it's not. I think it's actually oak extract. It was nicer as a cask strength, so I just emptied it straight from the bottle and had it just as a little cask sample. That was nice. I diluted it with some water, and that's really, for me, just gone, ruined it. So this will be one of those rare whiskies that'll be going cask strength only, thanks for me. So, at cask strength, I'll revisit that and see what I think of it. The rum cask was beautiful. That was delightful. Other changes from now to 2022 to 2026. Long time. Oh, look, I've been since then. I retired from the Australian Distillers. I'm now president of the WA Distillers Guild, so I'm not in that national sphere. I'm more on the state basis trying to push benefits for WA distilling in Western Australia.
But you're back on the bus of the ADA, yeah?
I'm back what, sorry?
You're back on the bus of the ADA.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You're not on the front of the bus. You're sort of back a couple of seats, but you're back on the bus.
Oh, look, I'm back on the – I was probably – you know, I left just thinking, you know, leave people to do things. I'm certainly back on board. I think the new executive that's there, some of those people I know very dearly and hold in very high respect. I think that they've got some major challenges, but, you know, my God, they need our support as members now more than ever. You know, the only way that we're ever going to achieve change is by having the ADA in a position that it can say it is the peak voice of Australian distillers, right? That's how we get listened to. Look, I think, you know, Kylie, who's there now, you know, ex-craft brewers, independent brewers, which is, you know, like a national body as well and had state-based, so, you know, a lot of similarity. She seems very highly regarded by bureaucrats, which is a big part of the challenge too. And I think, you know, my conversations with Kylie, she's collaborative, strategic, and, you know, sort of thinking for the medium to long term. I'm, you know, not formally involved in any role, you know, on a voted in type of basis at all, but certainly doing what I can to support them. Like all volunteer organisations, they're successful when members actually volunteer and do shit.
You're on the ADA bus, right?
Yeah, 100%. I would encourage everybody to be back on it.
Fucker sitting right behind
him. Yes. Yeah, you've probably got someone squeaking in your ear. Now, I've got to do a shout out, and this is a really important shout out for me. Christian Young is the president of Spirits New South Wales, right? And Christian is really putting his stamp on it, right? And no frou-frou, no fucking bullshit. Let's find out ways that we can save money for our members and bring value to our members. Mm-hmm. And, mate, from what I've seen so far, what Christian and the new management team in the Spirits New South Wales, hats off to them.
Yeah.
Oh, great. That's great. I'm talking to people, I guess, you know, one good thing that Kylie's doing is coordinating workshops between your state presidents. And so there's a fair bit of that communication and the left hand letting the right hand know what's going on. I yeah, Christian's been great. I think the ideas that are around the table and the positivity from people is really good. So, you know, that also helps with, as you say, being back on the bus with the ADA is that, you know, there's this great groundswell of people who want to see some things happen. So, yeah, I think it's a challenging time but an exciting time for it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And if anybody hasn't renewed their membership, please go and do so. I'm not in the executive, but my God, we need this. As you know, otherwise excise is going to get nuts, mate. Crafty.
All right, I'm going to put my claw up. And why have I got a claw? Is because I busted my hand massively last year, so I can no longer hand. No, I can do that. No, I can't. I've managed to work out how. Anyway,
what is it making?
Don't. So I can't hand stir a mash anymore.
Boil, bubble in trouble.
I can't lift a 25 kilo bag of barley.
He's never been able to do that.
I fuck off into a mill, right? I can't do it because I got this fucking claw.
He's old.
Yeah, I'm old. So I have changed the way I operate, right? I've changed the way I've operated.
He gets other people to do
you
it.
You should see the walker that he's got.
They're just assholes. They're envious because I'm on a five-year retirement. 5 years I'm retired plan. These fuckers are going to have to work.
Yeah.
But for me, the industry, hey,
Crafty, it's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll.
Okay. The industry, you know me, Cam. You know how passionate I am about everything, right? And to the top, too much. Bing, bong, bing, right? But I see some fantastic things happening in the industry, and I see some terrible things happening in the industry. And I want to ask you a question. If someone came to you and said, hey, I have no distillery experience, but I have this dream and I want to build a distillery, right? I'm going to quit my job. I just want to make whiskey or gin or whatever. I want to build a distillery. So I've got 100,000 in savings, right? And that should do it. That should do it. Can I get going? So what's your reply?
So once you stop laughing,
what's your
reply? No, look, I wouldn't laugh. I mean, look, that was my dream. You know, that was my
back then, but now in the current environment, in the current environment,
I would be going
safe and everything else.
Well, maybe the way to answer that is if I was asked now, would I set one up? Absolutely not. 100% no. That's with, you know, and look, I mean, let's be very clear. I was talking about the awards before. I was selling anything that wins a trophy internationally, we sell at a higher price. Somebody paid, we've actually sold 2.5 of them, 2.75 now. I'll talk about that in a second. Bottles of whiskey for $10,000 a bottle.
Great story. Wait till
he tells you. Christmas Day, a guy came in. I just found out from my Albany Cellador staff, they'd been down to Albany and had tasted it there. So, you know, we were sort of going, well, this is some of the world's best booze, and it's been judged as that. So if you want this particular cask that won that trophy, well, here's the price, and we kept putting it up. So Sullivan's Cove have sold some for $25,000 for their global trophy. So, you know, I think it's good to see that Australian whiskies are being worthy of those prices in the market for those particular exceptional, you know, sort of whiskies. So, even bearing in mind I have won a couple of global titles and I still own 100% of the thing, although the banks, you know, I couldn't do anything without them. They're part of the key. Would I be setting one up now? No. I think $100,000, you'd be very small scale. Depends on what you want to do. Do you want to have a little cottage industry where you've got a job for yourself and work on the weekends? Do you want to have a job where you can try and employ a few people? I mean, distilling is not glamorous. Getting to the still every day and working that still is not glamorous work. And like most jobs, 90% of it ain't glamour. So I think that there's a big difference between people's perception and, look, then having a good palate and actually being able to win, you know, consistently at solid international, like you've actually got to be able to do that. I have tasted some products that I would, you know, sort of say to people, I think that there's some tweaks that they might be able to do or refinements, but I don't ever try to let that dampen people's enthusiasm, you know, for their own products, 100%. I guess it becomes interesting for us as we look at the export market and trying to do it in a more coordinated manner. In the old days for Wine Australia, you had to have an export license and your booze had to be going for a tasting panel to approve that it was, you know, that it was of sufficient quality, because we didn't want poor quality, you know, product overseas hurting Australian reputation.
Right.
You know, yeah. What do we do? We're going to be going down that path. How do we? I don't think they end up throwing it away because they were like, stuff that. You know, and then some people are going, well, I'm a champion winemaker, and who are they to tell me that my wine is no good? Exactly the same for us. So I think we can learn from a lot of what has happened.
Yeah.
I do hope that we've got to win on quality and our environment and those sorts of things. That's just it. So
come to a scenario, husband and wife, right, working, and they both say, okay, we both want to build our distillery. That's our dream, right? And we think that we're going to make a fantastic product, right? But we have no experience, and we're going to start with, say, a 2,000 liter still. That's what we want to do, and we're going to do our own brew. We're going to make our own wash, and we're going to build a bar, right? We have to have a bar, and we're going to have to employ people.
We've obviously had a bit of a thing.
Exactly. So
they've got a spreadsheet.
They're looking at what, a $2.5 million startup, would you say, or less, or how? What would you say?
I would be thinking to comply with the hazardous area requirements and the hazardous storage requirements, because a lot of people, I think, you don't know what you don't know, and a lot of people are not aware of the hazardous areas, right? And that shit is expensive. I just spent $5,000 on a fluoro light to go on the roof. That's
listen, people. Wow. Yeah.
And look, it is key that, you know, for a number of these things, the risk is low. So the risk of occurrence is low, but the consequence of what happens if it goes off is absolutely major. So I think for people to comply properly, you know, that's tough. I think that, I think you need to put the money in it. Look, the one I saw the other day was set up beautifully. I think that they'd gone Rolls Royce on a couple of things? Yes, possibly. But, you know, it was a very, very safe distillery, right? If I had the money and the market was growing, I'd probably go, yeah, okay, I would put my foot on that. But where it is at the moment, I'd be going, I'm not investing. I've got 14 stills. I'm going to just put another 200 litre still in, brand new still in Margaret River. So I don't need to reinvest in that capital. I think if you're going to do it, and I remember Bill Lark said to me in the very early days, he said, Cameron, you can spend a lot of money setting up a distillery, particularly if everything's got to be new, or you can be clever and you can be careful and you cannot spend so much money. So I bootstrap everything. I'm still bootstrapping stuff 22 years in. For us, it was 13 years to hit a profit. Years to hit a profit. Yep.
Right. Wow. So bootstrapping works if you know what you're doing and you have experience. But if you're brand spanking new, right, you will burn money with consultants. So you are talking multi-million dollar operations with no guarantee of selling a drop of booze.
You could set up a small distillery, under probably $250,000 and under if you really
need to have an outlet for your stuff.
Making
it is easy.
Yeah, making it and going, ta-da, here I am, and there's crickets.
Yeah. Yep. You're right, Todd.
I know a certain brand, I won't say who, has released their first whiskey.
Ta-da.
And it's $450 a bottle.
Ouch.
Right? Yes, they've got awards, international awards.
Yeah, wow.
Right? And they're going, ta-da, here we are. And the world is going, where were you with pricing? Things have moved on a lot from where it was. And number two, crickets.
Mm.
Yeah, look, I think, every person's got to stand on their own. We are selling a good number of products of ours, which we call award winners. So anything that's gold medal or above internationally, and we've had over 230 or 40 of them, so we've got a few to sell.
Credibility.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly what I said to this other young distiller who's starting out, and I think he's got this great location and place where he can be. Yeah, from that point of view, you know, I said to him, just take your time, build your credibility now. That's what you've got to be doing. You know, make sure that that's it. Get consistency of winning medals internationally. Build your point of difference. Don't just think about, you know, going overseas and thinking you'll export straight away. On that, if anybody is interested, the Austrade event to Shanghai, Hong Kong and Macau, and I think there's 600 million or 360 million people in that Greater Bay Area, right? So it's, you know, like so much bigger than Australia.
I lived three years. I know well.
Yeah, so it is huge. And look, very, very culinary inclined and everything else. But I think they're offering walkers packages, which made me think a little bit about sort of The Walking Dead. Oh, we got zombies coming on. But I think they're offering a package then to sort of be part of the program but not have the full expense of having a stand at one of these international shows, which are not cheap. So if anybody was, you know, wanting to be looking ahead and planning ahead, then I'd be going, you know, consider going along as a walker to get a feel for it, meet people, see how it all happens.
That's a great idea. Great idea. My advice as a distiller, and I've been distilling now for 9 years, right? My advice is for particularly gin distillers, right? Stop saying my point of differentiation is I use local botanicals. It's just don't, right? The population is educated now, right? It doesn't cut through, right? Or I'm unique because I'm small. No, don't fucking say that, right? This is the Aussie angry distiller talking now. But it's true, isn't it?
Marketing. What's your USB?
You have to get your point of distinction, your point of difference, and it has to have clarity, and it doesn't have to sound like it's gone through an AI marketing machine. That's the key.
It will have gone through
an AI. Yeah.
It will have.
Genuineness.
Angers the fuck out of me. Sorry.
You've got to be genuine in it. I think that's...
You've got to be genuine, authentic.
Yeah. Yep, 100%. You know, the real deal. And that's one thing, you know, when my staff have said to me, oh, there's people who, you know, sort of set up in odd places and we don't even know if they're distilling it and whatever. And I'm saying, hey, look, we're the real deal. Just as long as we know we're the real deal, we do the real thing, we've got continuous improvement and, you know, we don't cut corners on stuff. So that's the market will sort itself out in time, all right? There will always be a market for people who just want super cheap booze and the cheapest there is. And I think in Australia we're actually getting to that grey market now. I think that there is quasi-legal booze out there as probably should have excise that hasn't had and stuff. So, you know, I think the government's a bit that. Sorry, Todd?
It'd possibly make you go blind.
Well, that's
actually, not included.
Yeah. Put that on your label. Yeah, we guarantee this won't make you go blind.
Look, I think that's one of the challenges too, you know, at the moment. Like I like to go, it's not just a challenge, there's opportunities. You know, that free trade agreement that we touched on before, I think there's 231 names now that we cannot use in Australia, spirit names. So things like Ouzo, sorry, you can't call, well, there are some grandfathered protections. Now, this is my preliminary view. I'm still going through the fair trade agreement in detail. But essentially it cuts the import duty on European spirits by 5%. So Scotch just got 5%. Well, I know that's England, not the EU, but anything imported from the EU that was a spirit is now 5% cheaper. That makes it harder for us to compete, for starters. And then there's these 231 geographic indicators, some of which we wouldn't care about, but Genevieve. Geneva, right? Yeah. Dutch. They're now, I'm torn on this. Geneva is a Dutch gin, like this. The Geneva gin. That is what it is.
The original.
Now, what do we call it when you make something that is made in the same manner, in the same style? Malt wine and juniper berries. And well, okay, it's a problem that our negotiators have given that away. But out of respect to the great distilleries in Holland, 100%, it's yours. So we've got this opportunity now, I think, and I hope the Australian Distillers leads it, to go, well, what are we going to come up with our terms and our names? Because there's got to be some marketing spend to help us, you know, recover from those loss of those other names that we can no longer use. I mean, Ouzo, Eau de Vie, I think Eau de Vie, Aquavit, you know, that's another one that's gone. So
Eau de Vie. So
I've got to check Eau de Vie. I might be wrong on that one, the Aquavit and the Ouzo, and there's a couple of other, there was a few where I was just like, oh, my God, what even is that? Look, like I know a lot about spirits. I was like, oh, right, that's what it is.
But the Eau de Vie, Sorry, yep. I was just commenting on the eau de vie. Eau de vie, right? So I released the product, which was eau de vie, right?
I honestly thought that was low wines.
No, and I called it ODV.
Oh, yeah.
ain't no gin, baby.
And on the label, right, because I didn't want to make gin at the time, on the label, it, in small letter, it said, this ain't no gin, baby. And that was about eight years ago I made that product, right?
Now, again, you know, look, I think that that's, although there might be a couple of European countries who might dispute who's the original owner of the term Slivovitz, but certainly, something that we can't use anymore. So if you make a plum, you know, a plum brandy, we might just have to call it plum brandy. We can't call it Slivovitz. Or if you make an apple brandy.
Style?
No, you can't use style. Actually, no. The free trade agreement has been, so what you've actually got on that bourbon there is, you know, traditional bourbon mash bill. Yeah. That's about as close as you could sort of get. You could not say Slivovitz style or inspired by Slivovitz. They've gone very, very tight. We're really going to face this challenge.
Really? Yeah, what about Arak?
Arak, I don't know. I haven't looked at all through to all 253. It was only the last 2 days this free trade agreement.
What have you been doing?
Yeah, what's going on? Come on.
Yeah. Trying to develop a strategy for us to get all on the same page to tackle the international market. That's where I'm trying to get to.
What about I'm really intrigued, right? So I make vatted whiskey. That's what I call vatted whiskey, right? And my definition of vatted whiskey is I can take a single malt from another distillery. My single malt whiskey and blend it, and I call it a vatted malt. I don't want to call it a blended malt because it's two single malts smashed together. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I would think that I do either vats or blending, marriages of casks. So for me, you know, I'm at the stage now where we have 5-10,000 litre tanks that are just full of cask strength whiskey that's fully matured. And now it's sitting there in this bigger homogenized mass to get consistency over time. What was the question?
So you know Riverbourne Distillery, Marty Pye, right?
Yeah, Marty, great guy. Yep.
Yeah, so Marty, he was the grumpy old man.
The original grumpy old man
about 4 years ago. Fuck me.
Keep your glass still.
Blended.
He's the grumpy old man.
Yep. And he's now the grumpy old man. Oh, fuck. That's what it is. But my comment is, so I've taken his whiskey and my whiskey, blended it and created a release, right? So that and to me is a vatted whiskey.
Yeah, I'm probably
making it.
No, Crafty, I reckon you and I'd be six paces with pistols, mate.
Oh, really?
No, I'm joking. Hey, return of the I'm joking with that. This represents, I think, the stage of where we're up to. Personally, I don't object to whether you use the term vat or not for vatted. Certainly, I think you could still call it a blended malt or a vatted malt. They're probably synonymous. I think because you've got two malts in it. If I do it within my distillery, I call it a marriage.
Yes.
So it's a marriage of cask. It's not a blend. It's still a single malt. It's
all not a blend.
One distillery.
Single malt whiskey. It's still a single malt whiskey. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it meets that definition. So what I'm sort of working...
What that means.
Yes. You've got... So Luke raised a very good question, right?
Yeah.
What's my counter to that is if I put blended on the label, I think I'm undervaluing the actual product itself.
Because I think that for... Blended whiskey is another layer of whiskey that we haven't explored.
No, but blended whiskey means Johnny Walker.
No.
To me, blended whiskey would be a mixture of grain whiskey and malt whiskey.
That would be a blend.
But so, at the same time, a blend of two different distilleries' whiskey blended together is also a blend.
So what's the Scottish blend? Three single malt whiskies. It's you know the one I'm talking about, Cam? There's one in particular, three distilleries. Monkey Shoulder is three distilleries, single malt whiskies.
It's well named, bro.
And that's called a I'm not too sure what monkey shoulder is
it's
called.
A blend.
It is called a blend.
I think it is.
But yeah. See, to me, that undervalues the product. That puts you down in the Johnny Walker red category.
But Johnny Walker Blue Label is a blended whiskey.
It's almost fucking 100% single malt, that one.
But it's still a blended.
Yeah. We're arguing amongst ourselves here.
That's all right. I'm just here for entertainment and observation purposes. That's all right.
Look, it's the age-old argument, right, in the industry. What is a single malt? What is a blended malt? What is a vatted malt? What is all the different categories? And whatever it is, it doesn't mean squat. It's how the consumer understands it.
I have probably foolishly put my hand up to assist a bit because Kyle at the ADA has got so much on her shoulders to do. There were some technical standards committees a couple of years ago, but now having a chat, it seems like there's still remaining a lot of work to do there. I've just designed a consultation process where I will go out to, hopefully, this is what I'm submitting to executive and ADA needs to approve it, go to all members, be going, well, okay, give us your feedback. Here's some proposals. What do you like? What don't you like about this? What are the other key issues? Have a bit of an iterative step. Industry ultimately need to... I think need to lead this because the Australian laws, some of them might say they're very simple, and by the flip side, you might actually go, they're incredibly crafty how they did that. You know, that's actually very, very clever. So I think we've got an opportunity as the Australian distilling industry, and particularly under the umbrella of Australian Distillers, to really adopt our own technical standards for products. I mean, what is gin? There's no legal definition for gin in Australia.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I'm a consumer. I don't give a fuck, right? I just want to understand the product that I'm drinking in the glass. So from a whiskey standpoint, it's a blurry landscape, right? So as an Australian organisation, we may go, this is our definitions. But to the consumer, it's like, well, what the fuck does that mean?
Well, our definitions are going to need to be consistent, really, with Australian law and then the international products as well, right? Because... Yep. Really, what we've got to be accepting is that the Australian market is, 28 million odd people, not all of whom drink, so probably 15 to 18 million drinkers, perhaps. And you look outside and you go, mate, the market's not here, the market is there. So it's the consumers globally. So we've got to have a solid reputation where, crafty, as you say, the consumer in Australia has got to know, I'm having a whiskey, this is really a whiskey. Mashville should be on.
Hammo's comment. Hammo, why?
Can you read that, Ken?
Yeah, I've got my glasses on. Hammo, why? Why would a consumer care?
Excuse me,
about...
one second, Jets.
Now, remember, I'm 62, all right? I am now the angry Aussie distiller, so I can get to get away with shit. So why would a consumer give a fuck about that?
And those who are not looking, Hammo has asked or said, I think the mash bill should be on each label. All right, Hammo.
Why?
What's your rationale for that? While we wait for that.
And we're not picking on you, Hammo. We're not picking on you. You know that.
You can see all his comments. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
More information is better,
I think. It's good you're back, mate. It's good you're back.
For all products.
Sam, your position. So why would a consumer compare about that?
About what? How much is on there?
Why would they be concerned that it had the mash bill on the label?
What does the US whiskey label?
I think it's about transparency in product for a lot of people. Okay, so that's so then you can actually find what makes it up. I mean, the interesting one for me is if we move to nutrition labels and then some of the gins that I swear got
sugar. We're not feeding people, but
yeah, no, but still, there's a lot of stuff that I think at the moment can sort of be hedged around the edges a bit. Where I think some transparency on that would be, you know, certainly very good. Look, my mash bills, I don't necessarily give away. Well, I won't give away. I've published my roasted malt mash bills for everybody to see from 2010, 11 or whatever. But, you know, that's – I don't actually necessarily give the percentages because a 2% change in vegan whiskey. Little changes can make a big difference. But where do you draw the line at then? Do you want to know whether there's exogenous enzymes have been used, you know, in a whiskey?
That's a big one. Yeah.
So what you call additives, you know, or adjuncts. Are we allowed to use a brewing adjunct? And what brewing adjunct? Are you allowed to add sugar? Well, I've never added sugar to my mash. But yep. I have heard some talk of some people who might put some sugar in their mash. So, yeah, you know, yeah. I think it's time. It's really time for us to, you know, go, hey, look, we're a serious industry now. There's thousands of us. We are getting a global footprint and recognition. We've got to make sure that we maintain our position globally as a serious premium product, and that's going to be by having standards that people sign up to and follow.
I'm going to add to what you said, Cam. So, that let me go first, then you can go. So, no, I'm going first. Okay. So, come to America, right? America, you had craft brewers that went, hey, we're almost making whiskey. All we need is a still, and we won't take the we won't put the hops in, and we'll fucking make whiskey, right? Really, really exciting times, right? The Americans manipulate their water chemistry. They add chemicals, right? Natural things, right? Mm. So you go, that makes a lot of sense, right? In Scotland, it's like, no fucking way. We're using fucking Scottish whiskey. We're fucking, and we can't add any additives. But we're Australia. We can actually do what we want. So brewers... And manipulating chemistry and using enzymes in that. And I mean, within reason, Cam. I mean, within reason, we can.
Well, and brewers use all sorts of additives.
They use sulfates. They use calcium. They use all sorts of things.
Beer brewing all the time.
To adjust to
what the Australian law says that whiskey must be made from a mash of cereal grain, water, and yeast.
From 1901, is it? From memory?
Yeah. Taste, flavour, and characteristics of whiskey. So,
must smell, taste, look like whiskey.
100%.
I'm using whiskey, guys, as the argument point.
Yeah, well, but here's how the law works, right? There is no definition of that. So when a judge comes to interpret it, they would be going, "Hey, industry, what are the parameters? Look, where do I get guidance from?" And I think the Australian Distillers, as the peak body, has the opportunity to be going, "Well, actually, here's the types of things that should set the parameters for Australian whiskey." You know, I mean, there's some other there are some other interesting things around if I produce my whiskey in one state, say Victoria, and then I send it to New South Wales for bottling or reverse, well, it might be whiskey from Victoria but have New South Wales water in it. Is that still then Victorian whiskey?
Yeah.
There's going to be a whole lot of, I'm sure, contentious conversation and robust, warm argument possibly over some of this stuff, but I think we've got to
transparency across all fronts on this.
Okay,
yeah, so 100%.
You go. He's got the microphone.
No. So having a set of standards that we all work towards sets the ground rules.
Yeah.
A consumer doesn't give a fuck about the standards.
Yeah.
They're worried about the taste.
Yeah.
But if everyone's on the same ground playing field.
Yeah.
You don't have someone trying to be really creative and doing their thing according to the standards, and you have someone who's breaking the rules.
Yep.
Or breaking the standards over here.
Yeah. So you set the rules. Yep. Everyone agrees. It's transparent.
And Australian standards for whiskey is there.
Yeah.
Is that everyone when does it. Is our sort of lack of standards or our very broad broad term of standard in Australia, is that not what makes
innovation.
The Australian industry so innovative?
It does make
us a little bit more innovative than...
That's a big word.
It is a big word. So how do you balance?
Look, I think Australia has one of the highest standards.
Night, people.
Oh, King Lake, beautiful. Like that.
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Australia, particularly if we look at rum, Australia is one of the very few countries in the world that requires white rum to have been aged for 2 years in oak. So rum has to go into a barrel. It'll take colour out of a barrel, and then it needs to be filtered or reverse osmosis or redistilled to take that colour out. And I know distillers do that here. Now, we're one of the few. So our rum is actually, and well, people might poo-poo Australian rum like they're used to our whiskey, our rum standards are actually some of the highest in the world. So I don't think we should be giving that up. I think we should be going, our forefathers were forebears, men and women involved, very clear on what we needed to have, and we shouldn't be watering down those key bits that are going to allow us to maintain what's your unique selling point? Australian rum, even if it's white, has to be aged for 2 years. Very, very few countries in the world, right? there might be two. So I think for us, the issue is we know what whiskey is, but what about, well, what is single malt? What is a vatted malt? What is a blended malt? Okay, yeah. If we're using other grains, well, what adjuncts are permitted? What adjuncts aren't permitted if we acknowledge that any of them are, that sort of thing. So, I think there's a lot of work around it to be done, but for me, it's all got to be around setting the Australian bar. If the rest of the world is here, the Australian bar for spirits, I think, should be here, and that's the way that we retake that space globally.
Yeah. It's going to be a vigorous debate. I look forward to it. I look forward to being in the front row at the table and going, I've just got a question and a comment.
Hey, Crafty, you broke your hand. You can't stare anymore. You can't stare anymore, mate.
Oh, yeah. The claw. I got the claw. I got the claw.
100%.
If we're sitting in an Australian standard for whiskey,
we're
all in whiskey,
Do
we take on board what's happening overseas?
Oh, 100%.
In the sense of for us to call whiskey in Australia, it's 2 years.
Yeah.
But if we were to send our 2-year whiskey to Scotland, what would happen?
Mm. It's Australian
should
whiskey.
We do 3 years? Should we align with
Europe? I don't think so. Look, America's 2 years, Australia's 2 years. Yeah. Well, America can be 5 for some other things, but Australia's 2, which I think probably suits our climate. I think, Scotland is 3. We could move to 3, but I do find that you can get quite nice extraction out of barrels at 2 years. And let's be very frank, I think the quality of our product going into it is such that 2 years is sufficient. I don't think it needs 3 years because it's good
enough. What about commercially? You're trying to sell your booze into Europe and they go, but it's 3 years. Is that a barrier
to entry? There's some it's some inter-labeling, and this is, again, where I'll need to look at that free trade agreement, but there should be a clause in that agreement that says if it's a product that's called Australian whiskey and meets the Australian definition for whiskey, then it can be sold in Europe as legal as whiskey, even if it's 2 years, not 3. But, again, that'll be up to me. That's how most of the free trades work, around that international acknowledgement of the differences. So, this, and if it's not there, then that would be something that we would be pushing to have amended in a future version of a free trade agreement, and any other ones not to have that. I mean, let's not forget, spirits are still held back massively compared to, wine and beer in terms of export. And at the end of the day, we are both a primary and a tertiary industry. So we're next level of complexity, next level of tax, all that sort of thing. So, look, we've got a lot of impediments, but, I think I've probably rabbited on for enough, gentlemen.
No, I've got one more. I really want to hear your position on this. So, hypothetical, distiller A. Distiller A decides to make a gin, right? And he goes, I want to make a gin, but I'm going to wind the juniper back as much as I possibly can, to the point that it's almost a vodka.
One part per million.
Yeah. So there's no correct me if I'm wrong, Cam. Yes, you must have gin in your recipe, but there's no legal requirement on what your level of juniper is in a gin. Is that correct?
I would think that a judge would go, there's no legislative definition, so therefore I'm going to look under the common law as to what the definition for gin should be. And there's no legal definition in Australia. Is there some published statements out there by industry that tell me what gin should be? Because I'm a judge and I drink whiskey, not gin. So I think within Australia, to me, it seems to be quite universally accepted that it must be predominantly juniper to be called a gin. You can have other botanicals in there, 100%, but it must be predominantly juniper, that limonene, piney smell. And this will be one of the things that will have to come out during the standards is, for me, Australian gin should be predominantly juniper to be called gin. Right?
Right.
If it's not predominant, then you're into something different and you call it something different.
You're making vodka.
I must say that if I was to buy a bottle of gin and it tastes like vodka,
it's vodka.
That would be the only bottle of vodka I ever bought.
Right. So we're going to wrap up.
Well, Todd, I had to tell you that gin's just flavoured vodka, don't you?
Oh, the fuck!
100%.
I like the gin flavors vodka.
So, Luke's
and my girlfriend is the same.
Yeah, don't go away. You know the drill. But let me just say one thing, mate. It is so good for us to be back.
Yeah.
It's so good to have a really great conversation with you. So appreciative.
Yeah.
We've had fun. We're a bit pissed right now. That tiger snake.
Buy it.
Honestly, guys, what's the price point on the tiger snake, mate?
LUC is about 45 or 46 bucks a bottle, and retail 65.
Wow.
65 for you guys out there.
65.
Get yourself a bottle or two.
Stick it in a coat, and you'll never ever look back. And
yeah. Or dry ginger.
Your door, and you'll go, fuck off. I know someone else. Yeah. All right? That, mate, seriously, no shit, no bullshit. That is sensational.
Yep.
Drinking straight, drinking with Coke. Yeah. Love it. Seriously, love it.
Go to your local you, and Tiger Steak on Coke.
And say, we sent you.
Who's we?
I don't know. Who's we?
I don't know. I asked you.
I don't know what we call these now. Like, they used to be shit sessions.
Yeah. We don't shoot the shit. We're warts and all.
I mean, it's a. I don't know what do we call it?
We're warts. We're warts and all.
Oh, hold on. Tiger Snake RTDs.
Ooh.
Question mark.
Oh, we didn't. Whoa. Settle down, yep. People.
Work in progress.
Another half an hour here.
Work in progress. It's happening slowly.
Stay tuned.
Watch this space, Emma.
We will catch you when. Let us know when they're going to release, and we'll. We'll have a taster. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Next episode is what? We haven't fucking gone that far.
He's going to lock that in.
You've got a month to get us a Tiger Snake RTD.
I don't do it quickly, guys.
So we do have another episode lined up. I will be putting it out on the socials soon.
Yeah, soon.
Yes.
So, guys, we've had a massive following tonight. It is thank you. We hope you're enjoying the content, and you can see that we delve into the weeds. We are cross between Joe Rogan and Graham Norton.
With none of the talent.
None of the talent, but that's who we are, right? And I'm now 62. I am angry.
Are you 62?
I am 62, and you know that.
Me. I didn't know that.
I am the angry Australian Aussie distiller, and I'm retiring in 5 years, so the shackles are off with
you're
me.
You're retiring in 4 years and 7 months.
Fuck. No, mate, this is a shit I've got to fucking deal with. Thank you, Cam. Thank you all. Please like
and subscribe
for that usual shit.
Don't go, Cam.
We'll catch you next time. And yeah, subscribe on YouTube.
That and tell your really friends. Helpful. Spread the word.
All right. Thanks, all.
Bluebird's a word?
Bluebird.
Bird is a word.